or blown flat by the shockwave of its collapse. Trucks overturned, lampposts bent and twisted. Dust hung in the air, and the stench of death was everywhere, inescapable. For 3 days, Bracknell and Lara did nothing but dig bodies out of the collapsed buildings of the base city. The tower lay across the ruins like an immense black worm, dead and still, strangely warm to the touch. It had ripped out of all but one of its base tethers. In a distant corner of his mind, Bracknell thought that they had designed the tethers pretty well to stand up even partially to the stress. He worked blindly, numbly, side by side with a few surviving technicians, clerks, maintenance people, cooks, and others who had once been a proud team of builders. Lara worked alongside him, never complaining. Like Bracknell and all the others, too tired and shocked and disheartened to do much of anything except scrabble in the debris, eat whatever meager rations they could find, and sleep when they were too tired to stand any longer. Grimy, her face smeared with soot, her fingers bloody from digging, her clothes sodden with perspiration, Lara still worked doggedly at rescuing the few who were still alive and dragging out the mangled bodies of the dead. The third night they saw torches lining the road from Quito, heading toward them.
"Volunteers?"
Lara asked, her voice ragged with exhaustion. "More likely a lynch mob," said Bracknell, getting up from the rubble he'd been digging in. "Can you blame them?" said Danvers, who was working beside them. "They're coming to kill everyone here." "No," Bracknell replied, standing up straighter. "It's me they want. I'm the one responsible for this." Lara, her weariness suddenly forgotten, turned her smudged face to Danvers.
"You're a man of God. Do something. Talk to them. Stop them."
Danvers looked terrified.
"Me?"
"There's no one else," Lara insisted. "I'll go," Bracknell said grimly. "I'm the one they want."
I'll go with you," Danvers stammered.
"You stay here," Bracknell said to Lara.
"The hell I will. This is going to be ugly. I'm going where you go, Mance."
The three of them walked, tottered really, down the rubble-strewn street to the main road, where the torch-waving mob was marching toward them. Farther down the road, Bracknell could see the headlights of approaching trucks. The crowd was mainly young men, all of them looking tired and grimy, clothes torn, faces blackened with soot and dirt. They carried shovels, picks, planks of wood. "Christ, they look like us," Bracknell said to himself. "They've been digging for survivors, too." Danvers fished a small silver crucifix out of his pocket and held it up. In the flickering torchlight, it gleamed fitfully. The mob stopped uncertainly.
"My sons," he began.
One of the men, taller than the others, his eyes glittering with anger and hatred, spat out a string of rapid Spanish. Bracknell caught his drift. "We want the men who killed our families. We want justice." Danvers raised his voice.
"Do any of you speak English?" "We want justice," a voice yelled from the crowd. "Justice is the Lord's," Danvers bellowed. "God will avenge."
The crowd surged forward dangerously. Danvers backed up several steps. Bracknell saw that it was going to be no use. The trucks were inching through the rear of the mob now, bringing reinforcements, he thought. He stepped forward.
"I'm the one you want," he said in Spanish. "I'm the man responsible."
An older man scurried up to Bracknell and peered at him. Turning back to the others, he shouted,
"This is he! This is the chief of the Sky Tower!"
The mob flowed forward, surrounding Bracknell. Lara screamed as Danvers dragged her back into the shadows toward safety. The leader of the mob spat in Bracknell's face and raised his shovel high in the air. A shot cracked through the night. Everyone froze into immobility. Bracknell could feel his heart pounding against his ribs. Then he saw soldiers pouring out of the trucks, each of them armed with assault rifles. An officer waved a pistol angrily and told the men of the mob to back away. "This man is under arrest," the officer announced loudly. "He is going to jail." Bracknell's knees nearly gave way. Jail seemed much better than having his brains splattered with a shovel. The trial. As the crisply uniformed soldiers with their polished helmets and loaded guns bundled Bracknell into one of the trucks, he thought, of course, they need to blame someone for this catastrophe. Who else? I'm the one in charge. I'm the one at fault. He was treated with careful respect, as if he were a vial of nitroglycerin that might explode if mishandled. They placed him in the prison hospital, where a team of physicians and psychologists diagnosed Bracknell as suffering from physical exhaustion and severe emotional depression. He was dosed with psychotropic drugs for 5 of the 6 months between his arrest and his trial. During those 5 months, he was allowed no visitors, no television, nor any contact with the outside world, although police investigators questioned him for hours each day. Sky Tower Corporation declared bankruptcy. Its board of directors issued a statement blaming the tower's collapse on the technical director who headed the construction project in Ecuador, the American engineer Mance Bracknell. Several of the board members fled to the lunar city of Selene, where earthly legal jurisdiction could not reach them. After 5 months of imprisonment, Bracknell's interrogators flushed his body of the drugs they had used on him and showed him the written record of his confession. He signed it without argument. Only then was he allowed to speak to an attorney whom the government of Ecuador had appointed to represent him. When Lara was at last allowed to visit him, he had only the haziest of notions about what had happened to him since his arrest. Physically, he was in good condition, except that he had lost more than 5 kilos in weight. His deep tan had faded, and his voice had withered to a whisper. Emotionally, he was a wreck. "I'll get you the best lawyers on earth," Lara told him urgently. Bracknell shrugged listlessly. "What difference does it make?" The whole world watched his trial in the high court in what was left of Quito. The court building had escaped major damage, although there were still engineers who had been brought in from Brazil poking around the building's foundations. Most of the court's high, stately windows, blown out by the shock of the tower's collapse, had been replaced by sheets of clear plastic. Sky Tower Corporation dissolved itself in the face of trillions of dollars of damage claims. Bracknell was too guilt-ridden even to attempt to find himself a lawyer other than the government-appointed lackey. Lara coaxed a family friend to represent him. The old man came out of retirement reluctantly and told Bracknell at their first meeting that his highest hope was to avoid the death penalty. Lara was shocked. "I thought international law forbids the death penalty." "More than 4 million deaths are being blamed on you," the old man said, frowning disapprovingly at Bracknell. "Mass murder, they're calling it. They want to make an example of you." "Why not?" Bracknell whispered. Although the trial took place in Quito, it was held under the international legal regime. Years earlier, Lara's lawyer had helped to write the international legal regime's guiding rules. That did not help much, nor did Bracknell do much to help himself. "It's my fault," he kept repeating. "My fault." "No, it isn't," Lara insisted. "The structure failed," he told Lara and her lawyer time and again. "I was in charge of the project, so it's my responsibility." "But you're not to blame," Lara insisted each time. "You didn't deliberately destroy the tower." "I'm the only one left to blame," Bracknell pointed out morosely. "All the others were killed in the collapse." "No, that's not true," said Lara. "Victor is in Melbourne. He'll help you." At Lara's importuning, Molina flew in from Melbourne. Sitting between his two lawyers on the opening day of the trial, dressed in a state-provided suit and a stiffly starched shirt that smelled of detergent, Bracknell felt a flicker of hope when he saw his old friend enter the courtroom and sit directly behind him, beside Lara. But once the trial began, it became clear that nothing on earth could save him. The first witness called by the 3-judge panel was the Reverend Elliot Danvers. The prosecuting attorney was a slim, dark-haired Ecuadorian of smoldering intensity, dressed in a white 3-piece suit that fit him without a wrinkle. The video cameras loved his handsome face with its dark mustache, and he knew how to play to the vast global audience watching this trial. To Bracknell, he looked like a mustachioed